Welcome to the Finding North podcast. I'm Chris Morris. This week's story is a sci-fi called Reprimende Creatura. Please enjoy. It started, as one might imagine an alien invasion to, slowly, almost unnoticeably. And then that ludicrous story popped up in the news. Woman attacked at the beach by unknown species. Tony supposed that around half of the population knew it was nothing more than sensationalist nonsense, but the other half, the half that just wanted something interesting to talk about, those were the ones that would soon have the entire thing spiralling out of control. The BBC news article claimed Margaret Mason, 42, was walking her dog along Broughty Ferry Beach in Dundee when the dog began barking at what looks to be a piece of washed up plastic. Margaret, intending to pick up the rubbish and place it in the recycling bin, received the shock of her life when the plastic suddenly lurched towards her, stung her on the arm, and then scuttled away into the sea. Probably a jellyfish, Tony thought at the time, or just completely made up. Rubbish. But then, like a few small droplets of rain slowly turning into a monsoon, more of these stories began appearing around the whole of the UK. Plastic creatures spotted at Blackpool Tower. Belfast Chief Superintendent declares emergency. Aliens in Swansea. London overwhelmed. Soon enough, it was impossible to ignore. The creatures began roaming the streets and the farmlands up and down the country, often mistaken for discarded pieces of plastic. Roughly the shape of an average 4-litre milk bottle, but about twice the size, the creatures had 6 thin, spindly legs which seemed barely enough to support their own weight. They moved clumsily, like spiders learning to walk in high heels, often tripping themselves up before their legs would flail around wildly in an attempt to regain control. The creatures were named Reprimende Creatura, a silly phrase, Tony had thought, which had been used by a politician somewhere and had stuck. No fatalities or even major injuries had been reported as a result of the creatura, but they were still vicious things, and perhaps nobody had dared yet to get close enough to really know how dangerous they might be. Tony had seen in the news that a few of them had been captured, and some scientists in Oxford were trying to figure out exactly what they were and where they had come from, but nothing more had been reported. Before long, most people stayed indoors. People only really went out for work if they had to, while many others refused completely. Many schools closed their doors, shops had begun to run out of stock. Eventually, the government had to declare a national emergency. "Please bear with us," the Prime Minister said on TV, with what Tony observed as a faux smile. "We are doing all we can to combat these reprimende creatura. I have this morning had conversations with both the French and American presidents, and while this plague has yet to reach their shores, our allies have assured us that they will do all they can to support us through this difficult period." Tony was lucky. He didn't just have a house he could lock himself up in. He had an entire observatory. An astronomer for over 35 years of his life, Tony had been thrilled by the mysteries, the complexities, and the beauty of space for as long as he could remember. He'd made no major discoveries in his career, but he was happy. Delighted to work in a field that was as endlessly interesting as astronomy. These days, some of his busiest hours were the days when a class of schoolchildren arrived for a lecture on all things space. It was enjoyable, rewarding, quiet. And if any good had come from this strange crisis, it was that the owner of this observatory had been forced to allow Tony full unsupervised access, or else risk a journey out to retrieve the keys. Tonight, Tony had once again locked himself in. He'd meant to return home after working, carefully making sure the path was clear before getting to his car as quickly as he could and locking the doors, but it had gotten late and it was dark outside, and he didn't fancy running into any of the creatura in such poor light. Another night at the observatory it is then. Could be worse. The best thing about being trapped here was that he had full access to all of the equipment, and the sky was clear. He should get some fantastic images of the universe from the telescope tonight. Carefully, he lowered his eye to it. Beautiful. Magnificent. Radiant, as always. The stars hung in the sky like ecstatic children of the universe, calling out voicelessly to the humans below. Behind them, a dark sky opened and swallowed the deep purples and blues of the galaxy. They radiated their splendid lights like great celestial artists. And just below this, as Tony observed it, something moved. What in the world? Yes, there it was. Something far away was hurtling downwards. It looked small. At first, Tony thought, better he hoped, it was something ordinary. A clump of space dust, perhaps. A tiny meteorite. But no. Closing in on it with his telescope as much as he could, it became unsettlingly clear what Tony was seeing. A group of objects, several of them wriggling. Difficult to say from this distance, but it looked as though they were heading straight towards Earth. And they appeared to resemble plastic bottles. He jumped back from the telescope. His heart drummed in his chest and his forehead became damp. What was he to do? Someone had to know. Who should he call? 999? Don't be so stupid, Tony. What service do you require? Emergency spaceships? All his long career, he had never so much as discovered a new piece of rock floating towards the sun. But now he had made the discovery of a lifetime. Possibly the most important step in solving the current crisis. He'd discovered the first life forms from another planet. And he had no idea what to do. In the end, and after an unsettled sleep, he reported it to his local MP. And with frightening swiftness, he found several government officials, scientists, and armed soldiers knocking at the observatory door. That's them, all right, Dr. Williams said, peering into Tony's telescope. Remarkable. How did you find them? Dr. Williams had been introduced to Tony moments before, the head scientist in some government organisation named DOCS, Department for the Observation and Control of Space. Tony was instructed to stand back, let him observe, and assist with any and all knowledge he'd acquired of these confirmed alien beings. I wasn't trying to find them, Tony replied. I was just spending the night here looking at space. What are they? Dr. Williams nodded to one of his associates in the room, a middle-aged lady who was earlier introduced to him as Naomi. We've had a theory for a long while that they might have been alien, except we'd long hypothesised that their biology would be something completely not of this world. Wait, Tony said, trying to keep up. So you're saying you've discovered otherwise? That these creatures are made up of the same kind of flesh and bone as animals on Earth? Not exactly, Naomi said. They're made out of plastic. Tony stared at the lady. He looked from her to Dr. Williams and to every other scientist and official standing in his observatory. Plastic? Living, breathing plastic? Well, not breathing, but yes, Dr. Williams said. Dr. Williams, do you have the coordinates? Naomi asked. Yes, ma'am, Dr. Williams replied. I have a rough idea of their location. Excellent, Naomi said. Let's finish up here and get back to the base. We can begin delivery operations immediately. Wait, Tony piped up as the officials began exiting the observatory. Delivery? You're planning to send the creatures back to wherever they came from? Dr. Williams looked at Tony plainly. From our study, it's clear that these creatures have come from an unknown civilization somewhere out there in space who have run into a similar problem with plastic that we've had. Their solution has been to fire it recklessly out into space. At the moment, we in the UK are unlucky enough to be right in the firing line. We're about to fire it all back, Naomi said, and maybe even stick in a little of our own plastic pollution for good measure. At least ours won't hurt anyone. Come along now, everyone. Tony followed the group outside the observatory, where he spotted some of the soldiers capturing a creature that had appeared on the road. Wait, Tony shouted. Wait, you can't do this. We've just discovered alien life and you're going to war with them. Naomi was in a large car with tinted windows by now. She rolled hers down and looked at Tony sternly. Don't be silly. It's not a war. It's just a message. Thank you for all you've done for us, Tony. Without your discovery, we might never have found a solution to this problem. The car sped away, leaving Tony with a miserable, heavy weight in his stomach. Later, he received a phone call. Tony, is that you? Yes. Who's this? Never mind my name. I believe you were visited by DOCS today, How did you get my number? Tony, please, just focus. We don't have time. Did you let them look through the telescope? They said they had to. You didn't give them the coordinates, did you? Well, no, but they looked at them. They're going to fire the plastic back where it came from. Where it came from? Tony, the plastic came from Earth in the first place. What? I don't understand. They thought the best solution to the plastic pollution crisis was to fire it all into space. Nobody paid any attention to exactly where at the time. It seems we remarkably managed to hit some alien civilization, who retaliated by making creatures out of them and sending them back. Oh, good God, if they've got the coordinates. What? What's going to happen? The first ever intergalactic war. Thank you for listening to the Finding North podcast. Please follow the podcast on your preferred platform and head over to chrisamorris.com for all the latest. Next week's story is an adventure called The Last Great Victory.